people should be suspicious of such calls. He also says callers who make urgent requests where people are pressured to send money to them immediately should be avoided. Mecca says Facebook Marketplace can be a source for scams, and he advises people who make purchases there to collect them in person if it's local, and paying cash. Common online scams include non-delivery scams, in which an item is paid for but never delivered, and non-payment scams, in which you sell something online and ship it but never receive payment. Mecca discusses some red flags to watch out for.
They may want you to ship that item right away. They may request to pay from an unusual source like a wire transfer or a gift card or crypto. Or they may overpay you and request a refund. All those should be red flags that you are either going to be out the money or attempted to be scammed. So we tell people to watch out for those.
Mecca advises people not to click on suspicious links and to shop safely online.
If you're shopping online, always verify the website. Make sure it's a secure site. Make sure it's a legitimate website. So double check the address. A lot of times they'll spoof a legitimate website with something that looks like it's coming from a website that you know, but it might not be.
For North Carolina News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
KBOO News poet Dan Raphael wants Santa to bring him a DC.
War Department, Injustice Department, Department of Homeland Intimidation, Department of Interior Exploitation of Labor Suppression. How can I minimize the effects of Trump on my life when I have no idea what's going on? I do know that whatever the feds are telling me isn't true, that whatever the Democrats are accused of doing, the Republicans are doing more. Trump's foreign policy statement boils down to, if you're not subservient, you're against us. Fortress America, kick-ass America, the world's America's open pit mine. We have most of what we need, including people, and everything else we can take. While internally, the Supreme Court is steamrolling the Constitution to pave the way for a unitary executive led by a narcissist with rapidly declining mental and physical health. They've only told Donnie no once out of 20-some cases. And this is just year one of at least four. I don't know if I'm more worried about what Donnie will give us for Christmas or what more he'll be taking away next year. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You are listening to an end-of-year membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Hannah Francis, Josh Salem, Dave Johnson, and Dan Raphael. The producer is Dave Johnson, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Farah Siddiqui, and Eric Tegedoff. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Terrence Burns. All our KBOO programs are made possible by support from our members. KBOO is currently in our end-of-year fundraising drive, and our goal is to raise $75,000 by December 31st. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Hannah Francis.
Street Roots is a nonprofit organization in Portland, Oregon that creates income opportunities for people experiencing homelessness and poverty by producing a newspaper and other media that are catalysts for individual and social change. I have here with me Street Roots correspondent Jake Thomas, here to talk about his recent article, Out of Sight. Critics question whether Mayor Wilson's homelessness plan just moves people around while shelter beds remain empty. Thanks for being here, Jake.
Of course.
Can you tell me a little bit about the mayor's current plan for ending unsheltered homelessness?
Right. So December 1st was a big milestone day in the mayor's plan. Keith Wilson was elected last year with a pretty overwhelming portion of the vote. I think it was something like 2/3. And one of his key pledges was he was going to end unsheltered homelessness in the city of Portland, which has been a persistent problem. And a key to that was just getting more shelter beds. He was just going to stand up a lot of shelter beds really quickly. And that was a key part to just giving people an option. Instead of sleeping on the streets, they could go to these shelter beds. His goal, was to create 1,500 of these beds by December 1st. And his office put out a press release on that day. They kind of downplayed that they didn't quite meet that goal. They had set up 890 beds, which is still a lot, but they did not. And they had plans to bring the remainder of those beds online later in the next year. And I think when one of them is supposed to open later this month. So they're coming. Interestingly, the mayor has said that some of these beds need to remain open. So that just like if they're full, the plan fails is essentially what he says. And the reason to keep some of them empty is because then that gives then the city can enforce its ban on camping or basically setting up camps or tents or other structures on public property. So you can't really enforce that unless you have something to offer to people. So you can't just say, pack up your tent, get out of here, or we're going to cite you if they don't have somewhere to go. So if you have enough of these shelter beds, you have a considerable number of these open at any given time, then you can say, pack it up, go to the shelter. This is what we're offering you.
Right. So what are some of the unhoused folks' experiences of the shelter beds and some of the feelings towards shelter beds?
Well, I tried to visit some of these shelters. There's currently 6 of them that have been set up. A 7th is on its way. And the city has also created some other shelters, has also worked with the county and to add some beds in other shelters like Bybee Lakes. They added some beds there. But really at the heart of it is these six overnight shelters. I tried to visit them. I wanted to go see them. But all these shelters are operated by private nonprofits that work with a contract for the city. None of them let me go visit, so I haven't seen them. But I've speaking to people. I spoke to a couple people, it was in November, the day before Thanksgiving. They were at Street Books. They were there to. They were there to get some supplies from Street Books, which gives out more than books. They give out wipes and there's various items that people need. And so they were there, and they just described one person I talked to said just being in one of these shelters is like being in high school. It sounds like there's a lot of rules, a lot of they're enforced arbitrarily, just kind of like who they like and who they don't like at the shelter. And I've heard that from other people too, is that they sound like pretty punitive environments where you just don't have a lot of control over your life. You might have too much stuff. If you have a pet, you can't bring your pet. That they're just not, that a lot of people just have just really bad experiences being in these shelters. And I think if you look at the data on the city shelters, these new ones that the mayor has stood up, a lot of them have stood empty for months. So if you look at the data for some of these shelters, I think 3 of them, 3 out of 6 of them, they had multiple months where half of them were empty. And the mayor would say that that's deliberate. You want to have some empty shelter beds at any given time. And they have it set up so that they can quickly add more beds if they needed to, we had like inclement weather or something like that. And in fairness to the city, they point out that one of those shelters was, they added beds, it was about 50 beds, they added another 50 beds. And so if you do the math, they have like a bigger denominator and so about the same number of people. So it looks like the utilization of the bed is worse. And it is, you're not actually seeing a reduction in people. So that's important to note. And overall, if you look at the overall number of people using these shelters, it has gone up since the beginning of the year, particularly since around July, you really started to see more and more people start to go to these. And the city says that just word needs to get out that these are an option, that these are places to go. And so there, more people are using them, even though there are issues with utilization. And so what is also notable about these shelters is that you can, it's not like other shelters where they're 24/7 and you have like a spot and you have, you just kind of have like a space where you can kind of set it up as like your home base. Like you can leave your stuff there and you can be there during the day and maybe connect to social workers. With these shelters, a lot of them, you get there in the evening and then they want you to leave pretty early in the morning, like 6 or 7. And they don't have storage to keep your stuff. So you have to maybe lug your stuff to the shelter, get up early, leave, and then lug your stuff around. Or the city does have a storage where people can leave their stuff, and there are day centers. But that has been described to me as a downside of these shelters, is that they're not 24/7, and it just requires people to be constantly moving around. And that's the reason why they might not go to them, is because you can set up a camp, and there's issues with that as well, but it's better than having to lug your stuff around across the city all day.
Yeah. And you mention in your article the number of camps that have been swept in November. Would you talk a little bit about the frequency of the sweeps and also the aspect of the police being in camps more frequently and how that affects unhoused people?
Compared to last November, there was not a notable increase in sweeps, which I was kind of surprised by. But I think there's a lot of reasons for that. The city uses like a bunch of criteria to determine when to sweep camps. So there's a lot that goes into it, but one factor that might affect it is there's a contract that the city had with the Oregon Department of Transportation to clean out camps that might be like by a freeway or some sort of property that's owned by the department. That contract ended in June because some listeners might recall, there was a lot of drama around the department's budget. The legislature just couldn't figure out how to fund it. And so they just ended that contract just for that uncertainty. So that could have something to do with it. But we do know now that there's enough shelter, there are open shelter beds. The city has a freer hand to go into these camps and start enforcing it. So police have, or other authorities have an impetus to go into these camps and say, you need to move along because there's shelter beds open. There have been not a whole lot of people cited under the ban, and very few people have gone to jail over it. And like the mayor says, that's not going to help anything. That's not criminalized. We can't arrest our way out of the problem. He used a phrase to that effect. And law enforcement have also said that they don't want to just start, prosecuting people for sleeping outside. And they want to kind of use it to nudge people towards engaging in services or going to a shelter or just doing something different. However, it is and what the mayor says is they have found quite a few people on open warrants while doing this, and they haven't given a whole lot of detail about just what these open warrants involve. The mayor has said that people have been arrested on open warrants for fairly serious things like being an unregistered sex offender or felony drug possession or gun possession. But they haven't released data on like just what, if these are just low level, like open warrants. So we don't really, there are some pretty serious things in there, but we don't really have a full picture about what these open warrants are about. And I talked to a public defender about this, and he was saying that a lot of open warrants usually aren't for really serious things. Like if it's really, really serious, they're just going to arrest you. They're not going to have you out on an open warrant. And if you're living outside, your life is probably pretty chaotic, and it's hard to remember things like court dates and to get yourself down to court. And if you miss a court date, there's just not a lot of ways to remedy that except for being arrested. So that is the other side to this.
Yeah, thanks for that. And then sort of coming back to the shelter beds debate, I forgot to touch on this before. There's a lot of city councilors who are sort of speaking out about the effectiveness of shelter beds. Could you tell me a little more about this?
Yes. So there have been some criticisms of the mayor's strategy from some members of city council. From the progressive bloc, it's mostly where that's coming from, called Peacock. I think it's worth noting that the city council did approve the mayor's shelter plan. After he was elected, they did vote for that. But now they're not really, they're really, a lot of them are starting to sour on it. Like some of the more progressive members of council. Like Angelita Murillo, she was saying that like she still sees unsheltered homelessness, which I think if you live in Portland, you've probably seen it. And she's really just wondering if this is just gives the city a free hand to just kind of move people from public view to not actually in their homelessness, but just have a free hand is move people around the city. And Jamie Dunphy, who's another city councilor, he had a blue sky post in November saying that the mayor's strategy was just forcing the problem into neighborhoods that are already suffering. So that's out there, that it's just not actually solving the problem and it's just moving people around. And it's also worth noting that even with all these new shelter beds, which is a lot that he did create pretty quickly, there's still like the city, I think people forget this, is that Multnomah County is seeing more people become homeless than exit homelessness. Like that is just, we're just producing more people who are without homes and with homes. And the county data shows there's about 7,400 unsheltered people. So even if you got this 1,500 shelter beds, it's still not enough for all those people. So it's the mayor says that he's going to move towards housing production now, which is widely agreed that that's what's really needed. But there has been questions about just like, what is this plan accomplishing?
As you outline in your article, there are other successful ways of getting people housed that exist. Could you tell me a little bit more about, it's just over 2,500 people, right, that were housed and mm-hmm. the means that they were housed through?
Yes, so I think we forget, and I think it's worth noting that Oregon and the city, that we've underbuilt housing for like over a decade now. So there is a real housing shortage. And when you have, you know, fewer units of housing, you have higher rents. If you have higher rents, you have, you know, a lower vacancy number. And there's been, you know, academic research showing that is really what contributes to homelessness. But I think it is worth noting that as the mayor is doing this, there's another plan for homelessness that I think people have kind of forgotten about. It's kind of been in the background. So in 2020, some listeners might remember that there was a ballot measure to create the supportive housing services tax. And that was, it's basically a tax on high earners, people with high incomes. And it generates this pot of money that's managed by Metro, which is the regional government. And it goes to the counties under Metro's jurisdiction. And that they use that for a lot of housing programs. And so that's been going on in the background while the mayor of Portland has been implementing his plan. And a week before the deadline, some reports came out. All three counties, Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington, put out reports on what they've done with that money. And it shows that it doesn't have any, like some of the successes in it don't have anything to do with shelters. It's about, so according to Multnomah County's report, it shows that 2,599 people left homelessness for the 2025 fiscal year. And using money from the supportive housing services tax. And so about a half of those were supported with rapid rehousing. And the whole idea with that is if somebody loses their housing for whatever reason, you want to get them back in housing as fast as you can, because once somebody is homeless, it gets harder and harder to get them out of homelessness. So that money will just like give somebody a short-term subsidy to get them back into housing. And that's been shown to be effective. And the other half of it, went to a different group, went to permanent supportive housing. And what that is that's housing for people with who've been chronically homeless or have some sort of severe disability, and where they just are really they just have a lot of issues. They just need a lot of support and a lot of help to live to live successfully on their own in an apartment. It includes wraparound services, which just means that that's like a nonprofit. People from a nonprofit might come by and help somebody with whatever they need, and that might be, you know, taking them to medical appointments or making sure they take their medications or just even keeping their apartment clean, just so that they have this level of support that they need to stay housed. So that report shows that that has been pretty successful. And I talked to the director of Multnomah County's homelessness services, Anna Plum, and she was saying that yes, there's also shelters are part of the mix as well. And there's a bunch of different shelters that are funded by the city and the county, and they come in a lot of different forms. And I asked her what role should shelters have? And she said that they should really be a stepping stone for people to get into permanent housing. And she said the problem we're having right now is that it's such a constrained resource in the region. So that's why there's been so much focus. At least from what I see, that's why there's been so much focus on shelters, is because they're quite a bit easier to stand up, which the mayor has shown, as opposed to getting permanent housing built, which is a lot harder. And permanent supportive housing that's also fairly resource intensive as well. Like, you need to have subsidized housing plus services for somebody to meet somebody's needs to stay housed.
You've been listening to an interview with Street Roots correspondent Jake Thomas about his recent article, Out of Sight: Critics Question Whether Mayor Keith Wilson's Homelessness Plan Just Moves People Around While Shelter Beds Remain Empty. For KBOO News in Depth,
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. On Tuesday, December 9th, Portland City Councilors on the Housing and Homelessness Committee moved a proposal forward to spend down around $21 million in unspent housing funds to help people with rent and to keep them from falling into homelessness. Here's an excerpt from that meeting.
I'm going to pass it on first to Councilor Dunphy and then Councilor Smith.
Well, thank you. Yeah. First, I just want to say, this is the good kind of budget surprise, but still not one that we want to see as a general rule. The city council should absolutely have a better accounting of where these dollars are. But right now, in a moment in which the federal and state situation is getting worse for renters, that the assistance that we have, this is certainly, as I said recently, this is not enough to stop the hemorrhaging that is happening in our community, but it is a unique opportunity for the city of Portland to help control some of the bleeding. This is an opportunity that we will hopefully prevent people from falling into homelessness. I just keep coming back to the fact that we have spent hundreds of millions, pushing into billions of dollars responding to our homelessness situation. We have amazing professionals working in all these different directions, getting up to 1,100 people a month off of the streets and into housing. And yet, 1,400 people are falling into homelessness every month. And there are 1,400 people every month having that scary conversation about that deadline coming forward when they know that they are going to be out on the street and having to make those hard choices. If this can help prevent those conversations from happening, if we can help people from being forced into economic displacement, what a opportunity that we get to have for our community as we round this this year out. So I'm really thankful, and I'm also I want to secondly appreciate Councillor Avalos and Councillor Smith, that this is a effort being brought forward by the District 1 councillors primarily. I know that the rest of my colleagues are enthusiastic to learn more and be supportive, but District 1 East Portland, we just need our help. We need extra assistance, and things are different east of I-205. As we said, the permanently affordable housing that we have been building for decades is functionally market rate housing in our district. And so we know that the need is greater than we can possibly meet, but this is an excellent first step, and I'm enthusiastic to be a co-sponsor on this. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Dunphy. And Councillor Smith, welcome. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify. I rise in strong support of the Slow the Flow resolution, sponsored by Councillor Avalos, co-sponsored by Councillor Jamie Dunphy and myself. Together, we do believe that preventing homelessness is the most critical step we can take in the broader continuum of care. As Councillor Dunphy often reminds us, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of what? Cure. Month after month, more Portlanders fall into homelessness than we can house. If we only treat the symptoms, we will never solve the problem. Today, we have nearly $21 million in funds to allocate. For too long, we've relied on incentives from developers only to see the cost of living outpace wages by the time new housing is built. Meanwhile, nearly 2,000 affordable units sit vacant while thousands of our neighbors sleep outside or cycle endlessly between shelters and day centers. That is totally unacceptable, Madam Chair. The resolution is designed to assist tenants living in small family-owned rental properties with their rent payments. It allocates vital resources to the working and renting community of Portland. By supporting small landlords, they can manage their expenses without resorting to evictions. This approach enables tenants to afford their rent, which in turn sustain local businesses. As a result, families can remain housed, stable, and engaged within their own communities. We cannot wait for another budget cycle or another fiscal year. Portland needs relief now. Every delay means more people pushed into a crisis. This resolution is about dignity, fairness, and keeping our neighbors housed. I urge my colleagues to vote yes on the Slow the Inflow resolution. Let us act with compassion, with urgency, and with clear understanding that prevention is the smartest, most humane path forward. I thank Councillor Avalos for her leadership, Councillor Dunphy for his partnership, and all of you for your commitment to addressing the most needed crisis of the day, homelessness and housing. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Hello, Council. My name is Molly Hogan. I'm the director of the Welcome Home Coalition. We are a multicultural alliance of organizations and individuals working on a housing justice movement in our Tri-County region. And as you all know, last week we delivered a petition to you all signed by over 2,000 people with three petition demands. And so we're here to enthusiastically support the Slow the Inflow resolution and thank Councillor Avalos, Dunphy, and Smith for bringing it forward. Our first demand is about eviction prevention because we know that we need to stop people from falling into homelessness. We're also really pleased to see the city stepping in to address what the Trump administration's harm. So I just want to reiterate that the Trump administration has made a new mandate that COC money and local money or that federal money be spent on funding emergency shelters. And so we'd like to see our local leaders really ensure that you're using federal dollars to fund our emergency shelter systems and use our local money for the things that the federal money won't allow spending for, which is long-term rent assistance and short-term rent assistance, all the rent assistance and the support services. And we also wanna uplift that in our Finding Home report that had the input of over 600 people experiencing homelessness in our region showed that a majority, 75% of people said they can afford to pay something for rent. And that is huge because that means our public dollars can go farther, right? We hear stories about folks stuck in our shelter system that actually does have $700 a month income. They could pay $200 in rent and have public dollars cover the rest, right? And that allows our public dollars to help more people. So I'll just cut it short for time and just say, yes, please move this forward. We're so excited to see this come to a January full council, hopefully, so you can start getting these dollars out into the community and really making a material change in people's lives. And most importantly, move people from our shelter systems into permanent housing and not create a bottleneck, what we're seeing now. Thank you.
And hi, my name is Amon Rutherford Green. I'll piggyback off of what Molly's saying. I'm a person with individual lived experience. I just want to get more help and more help for the people that I've been around. So I work hard, work three jobs, and I'm still not able to afford the rent. Child support is real high for me. I got two children that's still minor, and I'm just struggling trying to pay the rent with three jobs. So I'll keep it short and let the next person speak. Thank you, Avalos, for us having us.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Aaron Brown, and I'm the board president of Portland Neighbors Welcome. We are a grassroots, membership-based organization committed to making Portland a place where housing is a human right and where every present and future Portlander has a safe and stable home they can afford. We fully support this resolution to prioritize funding and investment in rental assistance programs in an increasingly tight housing market. We need to ensure that Portland families facing economic instability and precarity are able to stay housed. The bulk of this funding goes to initiatives that studies show are cost-effective in helping families avoid homelessness and to initiatives that intuition suggests are morally sound. As a grassroots organization focused on promoting housing abundance and affordability, we understand the need over the long term to build more housing to ensure we have more places to live for Portlanders. We also know that in the short term, the targeted investments included in this resolution are a critical lifeline to communities facing housing instability right now. We are delighted to see both of these initiatives undertaken in tandem from the Portland City Council and will continue to support these overlapping efforts. It is deeply convenient for all of us that the investments we can make to support the victims of America's Dickensian economic and housing inequality are also the investments that provide the most immediate stability, support, and care for our neighbors that need it the most.
Councilors referred the Slow the Inflow into Homelessness resolution to the full Portland City Council. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
I'm Sequoia Ezekwe for Ear to the Streets of Portland on the best community radio station on the planet, KBOO Community Radio, KBOO Portland.